Kia ora and welcome to the C Word Radio, the podcast for cancery people who want real conversations about cancer. I'm your host, Helen King. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find good podcasts. Welcome back to another episode. I hope everyone is doing well in these crazy, uncertain times. My morning has been the way it usually is when I am trying to hurriedly submit my episode to Planet FM. I have walked my dogs and I am sitting here at the kitchen table now hoping they won't start barking because they've been having a very barky half hour every time I try and record this introduction. So let's hope they be quiet just for a little while. Today's episode was actually recorded 2 months ago and we had just gone into lockdown. What I found really interesting listening back was our conversation was even more relevant than it was at the time. I actually wrote a blog for my podcast production company about why I think we need to reject grind culture. And this, once you start listening to the episode, you'll know why I'm mentioning this because I think this is all really relevant right now. Grind culture is basically the idea that to be successful or feel like we are worth something is that we must always be producing and achieving. Cancer was my wake-up call because I have worked myself into burnout a few times as an adult. A lot of my identity and my self-worth has always been wrapped up in my job or achieving. Now I'm trying to do things differently, and it has been, and it still is, an ongoing journey, exploration, whatever word you want to use. Because I can remember thinking when I was in the middle of treatment, and you know, you have those moments you think, oh my God, how did I get to this place? I just had this intuition, I guess, that I needed to slow down. I needed to stop and think about how do I live this life and not run myself into the ground. And I'm not great at it. Like I can feel myself often making those same mistakes and being drawn to, you know, jobs that will no doubt burn me out. What I'm doing at the moment to try and, I guess, change that script in my head is I'm putting my well-being first. And I think this is more important than ever at the moment because COVID has disrupted the way we live. Life feels really uncertain. It feels scary. There's a lot of stressed people out there and there's a lot of stress at the moment. I'm going to link the blog in the show notes so you can read more about some of the thoughts that I have around this and actually what I'm doing to help reduce the impact of stress and uncertainty in my life. Because I give some practical tips. I won't go too much into them now because I actually think that the episode today will also give you inspiration. My guest today is Tina Conrad, who was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2013. You may know her if you are a podcast listener, which I hope you are, because you're listening to this one, is DJ Breast Cancer. That was the name of her podcast. She published over 100 episodes, sharing her own experience and others impacted by breast cancer. Tina actually wrapped up her podcast this year, and she started a new project. It's a book of poetry called From Sea to Sea. From Sea to Sea is basically a journey through cancer and COVID, told from Tina's point of view as a breast cancer survivor. She talks about it in this episode, so you'll hear much more about it. But it's such a beautiful idea, and I think that, you know, when we've been through cancer, going through COVID now can feel very familiar, and that can be very triggering, but it could also be a way for us to, you know, use those tools that we learned during cancer to get us through what we're going through now. I will put a link in the show notes again. You can actually, for my Kiwi listeners, you can download a PDF copy of Tina's poetry book. People in the USA, you can get a hard copy. I have read some of it and seen her post about it on her Instagram, and it's beautiful. And I think that at the moment, we all need a bit of beauty and inspiration. Our conversation was so damn good, and I know I'm biased because it's my podcast. However, what I loved about talking with Tina is that we really got into a conversation about healing after breast cancer, or healing after trauma, to be honest, or stress, which I think is so damn relevant at the moment with COVID. And what I loved about talking to Tina is that I'm on my own, I don't know, path or exploration. I never know what words to use, but I'm just trying to figure out how do I heal after this monumental experience. And I know that faith is being really central to Tina's journey. And I think we can learn, you know, different things from different people who may not hold the same views as ourselves. And I was just so curious how someone who has a really strong faith, you know, how do they cope with big things or really challenging things like cancer or COVID or, you know, the death of a loved one. So we had an amazing conversation. I hope you enjoy it too. This is Tina's story.
I'm so excited to meet you, Helen. It's so awesome. And from one podcaster to another, it's such a pleasure and an honor to like join forces and talk all things podcasts and stories and healing and, you know, what we're doing in this crazy life after cancer mess.
Ah, yes, absolutely. So I thought we would start because I have been following you for a little while on DJ Breast Cancer, which is such an awesome resource for people. And I'll put all of that stuff in the show notes. And you have been a podcaster for a while, but you've moved into a new project. And I'd love to start there and for you to tell us a bit more about your poetry collection and what has really inspired you to move in this new direction.
Yeah, so writing was really instrumental during my cancer journey. I think it was only days after my diagnosis, and I woke up in the middle of the night and I had this like story about a magic potion and kind of how cancer was this poison, but yet at the same time, this beautiful gift that you could be given. And so it was like this immense moment that I had to like literally get out of my bed and write this story down. I was just like afraid it would leave me or be like a fleeting kind of thing in my dreams. So I got up and I wrote that. And then after my mastectomy surgery, that was like the first, you know, major milestone of my cancer journey. All I wanted was to see, just to take a shower and be, have all those drains out and to take a shower again after about 2 weeks. And all my company had left, like my family, my best friend, everyone had gone back home, and I'd been given the green light to take my bandages off and get into the shower. And I was actually by myself. And it was a gift in a lot of ways, because I think I needed to process all these feelings that I was feeling. But I saw myself in the mirror for the first time and didn't recognize like what I was seeing. And it was just this like shell of a person, and a body that I had known was gone. And it was really hard and loss and heartbreaking and everything like you can imagine. And I got into the shower and I just let it all go. And so then that inspired me coming out of the shower actually to write a poem called Tears in the Shower. And it's I cried my tears in the shower, the salt mixed with rain. I cried my tears in the shower so no one could see my pain. And I've gone on to do other, you know, interviews with so many other guests, and you'd be amazed at like how many people actually cry in the shower because they don't have their children around or they don't have this hoopla. It's like a moment of like peace and solitude and looking inward. And I think people feel their feelings in the shower. And so it was a really pivotal moment. And my husband encouraged me actually, because up until that point, I was writing blogs and keeping people updated on how I was, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to go so public with something, you know, that felt really raw and really real. And my husband's like, no, you need to share this. And he's like a really private person, but he's, people need to know that cancer is not sunshine and roses and puppy dogs and pink ribbons. There is a real side to this. And it's, you know, it's life and it's death and it's decisions and it's mourning and it's loss. It's all of those things. And so he really encouraged me to share that poem. And that just opened up the whole side of me that had been there. I used to write poetry when I was in high school or had gone through some losses of some dear family members. And it was just kind of my way of dealing and coping with, but it really opened up in cancer timeframe. So I'd written a bunch of poems and then COVID happened, you know, so I was diagnosed with cancer in 2013, COVID, obviously 2020. So 7 years apart. But what I found was it was this like circular reference. So a lot of the feelings and the triggers and the emotions that I felt during cancer really came roaring back during COVID. And so it's this isolation and it's this fear and mixed with hope and resiliency. And And a lot of the lessons and the things that I learned in cancer, I was able to actually apply during COVID. But I kept the journal. I worked from home for, I think, 15 months in a little desk in a new area. But because of that, I had the journals just laying next to me. And sometimes I would just have an idea and I was allowed this kind of space for creativity to flow through. So I wrote quite a few more poems during COVID. And then one day, I don't know, it was just like a voice. And I don't know how to explain it other than I truly feel like it's from God, whether I believe in the Holy Spirit. But I feel like it was God saying to me, like, hey, you have all these things. Why don't you put it together and share it with the world? And maybe one person will learn, or learn of my love too, because I do reference God in a lot of the poems too, and how he helped me through really dark days. So it was that spiritual essence of like compiling all these together. And so it just was this kind of moment of, yeah, I'm going to do this. And so I'm self-publishing it. It's coming out this fall, which I'm really excited about. And actually, people can go to my website and start to see it and preview it. I think it's really a beautiful tribute just of words and feelings. There's one about slow dancing in the kitchen with my husband, you know, on a really dark day. But it's that levity that you kind of have and finding those joys and just like the little moments. To one about quarantine straitjacket and just feeling like I'm stuck and I can't move and everything in between. So it's a passion project. I'm really excited. And I think people will feel something, and that's all that I want. And I think if we try to hide our feelings, we're not doing anyone any favors. It'll just come roaring back. So it's really just trying to get people to explore their feelings. And then just my message to people is to encourage them to write. Doesn't mean you have to write a book or, you know, necessarily share it with the world, but take those feelings that you have and release them. And you'll see that, you know, the power that they had on you, it really is freeing when that process happens. So yeah. That's what I'm up to.
Oh gosh, I just relate to so much what you said. Even going back to your first story there of being in the shower, because that's what happened to me as well, because I had a mastectomy with no reconstruction. And I've shared about this before, where part of my brain is very practical. And so leading up to that mastectomy, I thought, I'm going to look at pictures of women who've had mastectomy so I can see what it looks like. But I don't think anything prepares you to see your own body without a breast, or whether they are reconstructed and perhaps don't look what you think of as part of your body. And I couldn't look at all. I couldn't look when the nurse was changing my drains, and they started to notice. And I think they said, do you want to have a shower? And this beautiful young woman, she was a young nurse, and she stood outside the door while I had my shower, and I just broke down. I wasn't prepared for it. I wasn't prepared to see, my body in that way. So absolutely. I just, when you were talking about that, I just had this moment in my chest where I went, oh yeah, I totally get that. And I love that you've mentioned COVID, because I agree with that, because I found that too last year when New Zealand went into lockdown in March, and all of that same weirdness came back, where that panic sets in and you feel like you have to buy all these things. So I understand panic shoppers. No, and you feel like if I'm prepared, then it will be okay. And so I think COVID takes you back into that fight or flight thinking, I need to survive something. How am I going to do it?
I love that. I love the fight or flight. Like that is so true. It's so real. And I had FOMO on a major scale. Like I just didn't want to miss out. I felt like so much of my life was on pause during cancer. And then I thought that was done, you know, and I could live my life and I could have these goals, all stuff. But obviously I had other plans. I learned some really important things during cancer from my oncologist. Was actually full of wisdom. And he told me very early on in my diagnosis, he's like, you have to find joy in every day. And he's like, it could be simple things. He's whatever makes you happy. If it's doing baking or it's a walk or whatever it is, find that simple moment and capture it and embrace it. And that was really important for me during cancer. I found some hobbies again, that like even writing, I shelved that, and you know, here it came roaring back. And then during COVID, I had to turn to the same things. And sometimes it was trying new things, but just in the comfort of my home or being in nature and experiencing God and peace and, you know, solitude in nature and kind of shifting my frame and what is normal obviously had to change, but still finding joy in each and every day. And even though it was hard and it's difficult, you still, this is your one life. You have to go live it and be grateful for each and every day. And then there's just like this simplicity and beauty and slowing down that when we're in such a normal pace, we lose some of those beautiful details. But, you know, working from home and I got to see the birds and all the nature that lives outside my house. And I would see like a daffodil, like literally day by day, and it would change. And there was such a beauty like in each of those things that when I was at work, I was just too busy. You know, I'd get in my car, leave the garage, go to work, come back. It was dark. And like, you kind of miss a lot of stuff. And I think people felt that way too, probably with their kids and getting to spend more quality time with like their family, you know, their immediate family. So there's, you know, silver linings to a lot of things, still really difficult. And I think people can relate to that.
Oh my goodness, yes. Because we are back in lockdown here in New Zealand at the time. Have gone into focus. So here we have a number system. So level 4 lockdown in New Zealand is you cannot go anywhere unless it is essential. For instance, a supermarket, a pharmacy, or if you need medical treatment, petrol, etc. And only one person in your house can be designated to be the shopper as such. And so I am for our household, mostly because I go a bit stir crazy, but also I'm really grateful that I'm fully vaccinated. But it is really weird to be back into it because Delta is now in the community. But last night, because I was really in the panic yesterday, and my partner took one of our dogs out for their walk, and I made dinner, and just the action of slowing down and reading the recipe and doing step by step, you know, and I guess that's a form of meditation and mindfulness. It just was that moment where I could go, oh, okay, this is a normal thing. And I love what you say about finding joy, because what I've found post-cancer, so I'm 3 years post-diagnosis, is it is the small things that really give me joy. When I started noticing, oh, wow, I've had a normal day, that was amazing. Where it might be my partner and I would take our dog out and it was great, and watching the dog run riot in a park. Or, yeah, just those small moments where, oh, I've gone out and got myself a coffee at a cafe, because that's one of my sort of pleasures in life, is to go out and have a lovely coffee. And going from the grind, going from the pushing myself to achieve all the time to having to slow down and really think about how I spend my energy was a hard lesson, but probably quite a good one. And especially now with the uncertainties and things, I think remembering that, what can I do today that will bring me joy and take me out of the panic?
Yeah, for sure. And I had started a gratitude journal. So it's kind of a faith/gratitude journal. And someone had invited me to a seminar to kind of work on it. And I like the creative aspect. So it's like part scrapbook, part gratitude journal, part prayer journal. But you write what you're like, there's 30 to 31 days or however many days a month of lines. So for every day you write like what you're grateful for. And on the other side is for the month, you write what you're praying for. And it was really like, had an immediate impact on me, because I was interviewing a lot of stage 4 breast cancer survivors like during that season. And so I was able to put their names in a space and then put them on my heart and then actually transfer that, you know, over to God, because I found I was taking on a lot of that worry and a lot of that pain. And I want to make things better, but I don't know what else I physically can do. And so by actually putting their names in this prayer journal, gave me peace, because it felt like I was doing something with this information and controlling what I could control. And I think that's part of it too, with the recipe, like you have something that is concrete and is defined, and you can just follow that, because you're kind of living in this like world of chaos around you. So you have to take these like little nuggets of what you can control. But that was really important through COVID. And sometimes I would just write down, today I have my health, or today I have a roof over my head. And it could be simple things, but then it really does, you know, living in just the United States or any civilized nation, like, I'm really a lucky human being. And it makes you just see it for what it is. So despite all the news and the craziness and, you know, everything that you hear, just by waking up today and having an opportunity to live my life today, I start from a place of gratitude. And so that was really another good, wasn't really necessarily part of my cancer journey, but it really helped me through COVID. And I do encourage anybody going through it, through any days, a gratitude journal or a mindfulness, you know, practice of some kind is really, it's just really helpful for a person, I think, to go through and to start their day in the right mindset of like how to seize the day.
Oh my goodness, yes. Yeah, and it's like everything I'm relating to, it's actually quite, it's really nice. Because I think, oh, what a gift. I don't know, but it sounds like you feel very similar with the way that you've been doing your podcast, where it's this amazing gift that someone will share that part of their life with you, because it's a huge intimate thing. And I've spoken to people who are living with incurable cancer, and sometimes that is really hard to sit with, that I'm talking to this person and they may not be here in a few years, and knowing what to do with that can be really hard, and not falling into the trap of, I've got to save them, what can I do, of thinking I can tell their story and honor them in that way. I can hand it over to the God or the greater universe or the greater good and say, this is over to you now. I've, you know, put my heart in it. And I think that's really important at the moment, because you're right, there is so much insanity in the world right now. I went into a total despair spiral the other night because we had COVID, hello, we're back into lockdown, in Afghanistan happening. And I have a dear woman that I know from years ago who has family there. And I know, because I'm an empath, and so, you start taking on that stuff. But knowing that actually I can't do anything in this situation, but I can practically support my friend. And I know from going through cancer that what those things are, I'm going to bring you some food so you don't get cook, or I'm going to take you out for a coffee because you probably need some time out. Not that we can do that now, but you know, that practical things of how can I not get stuck in the grief or the overwhelm? What can I put into place to move out of it so I don't just go into that despair spiral? Because it's so easy right now to be doom scrolling or...
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And it is really hard when you feel like you can't support a friend in the way that you would or would want to, or would even want you to have been treated, and you're in this lockdown. And I had a really dear friend. I was able to actually visit her only one time. Like we met through podcasting. Emily Garnett was her name, and she did Intersection of Cancer and Life. And she's just amazing, just this powerhouse, amazing person. I was able to meet her in New York in February because I'd traveled there for work. And then she ended up passing away like the middle of March, or maybe it was the end of, I think it was the end of March, but regardless. And it's right essentially at the onset of COVID. And not that I would have, I live in Indiana, which I know you don't know all the states, but it's a considerable drive. Like it would have taken me a long weekend just to get there and back. But the fact that I couldn't go and couldn't honor her and couldn't do these things during COVID put me in like a more worse spiral. So you're dealing with like the loss of a friend, and then knowing that you can't grieve or deal with it or support the people that love her too in the way that you normally would is also really difficult. I'm still kind of processing all of that in her death. And there's actually a poem for her in my book too. And someone said to me, who's like a dear friend, Michelle, you should send her husband and her son like this poetry book and say like just how much she impacted me and touched me. And so that they can see that in some way she does live, you know, she's living through this word and this book and these pages that people will touch, and she will have a long and lasting, you know, legacy on this world. And so that's such a beautiful idea. I was like, oh, thank you for such a awesome like idea that I can do something so simple. Hopefully her husband, her son will eventually, you know, see this book and like know her reach goes so far, and I want to, you know, honor her in that too.
It's really important, I think, part of what you're what you're talking about is humans, I think, inherently need ritual. And sometimes, you know, that may be around death and the funeral process. No, you know, no matter what your background, that is a process. It's a process of, you know, moving that person on into that next stage, or it's a way of moving into your grief. And I think with COVID or anything which prevents you from entering into that is really challenging, and especially because there's our collective grief. So when we stand together at a funeral or at a memorial, I think there's something more powerful in that, because we're standing together in our collective sadness and grief for that person or event. And I've been talking with other guests about this, about the way we grieve, because I think, I don't know what it's like in the States, but in New Zealand, because we have that sort of British stiff upper lip, it can be, we're not really taught how to grieve. We're not taught how to, you know, be okay with feeling. And I think that COVID has taught us that, you know, that we need to acknowledge.
We need that.
Yeah, we need it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's a pretty big range in the United States, I would say. I had definitely some tragedy growing up. When I was 13, my uncle, who was in like 23, was killed in a car accident. And that was the first time I ever saw my dad cry. And I will never forget, you know, and it wasn't until the cemetery. So like he hung tight through all the showing and all the process leading up to it. But when it was that moment of finality, he broke down, and he was wearing sunglasses, and I couldn't even see the tears. But I could see his shoulders just shaking. And it was, for me, it was really moving. And I think just, you know, my dad's 6'4", he's this tall, gentle giant, but to see a person so moved, it also moved me. And my mom and I were emotional. Like we show our emotions very much. Like growing up, we get together and watch a movie just to cry, just to feel those feelings. But I do think it's important that we all have these feelings and we all sit with them. And it does help if you have someone to sit there with you and to just help you through that process. And I think that's what I've struggled with so much, is seeing people go through funerals in this time frame and to have those numbers show up, like to support you or be limited in how it can be done. I just think that's really hard and really sad. And, you know, doesn't maybe honor such a life that was lived. And so That part is hard. I don't know. I have a really hard time hearing about people and doing people. I did just have a friend who passed away, and it was before the Delta variant was, now it's starting back up again here too. But they did a live stream. They had it on Facebook, and she had such a Facebook following, and her name was Nicole. And like, I just sat there and watched this beautiful like display of life, and to have her best friend and to have her husband and have children come up and speak about her. It was really moving. I laughed and I cried and I felt every emotion. And I was like, when it was done, I was like, that's how I want people to speak of me. Like she was such a dynamo in like her 30 some years of life, like probably lived more than people would in 300 years, but just amazing. But I think we have to feel those feelings like together. You're right. Like it is such a process.
Yeah, it is. It is a huge process. And I sort of grew up in a house where I think we weren't taught how to feel our feelings. So as an adult, I'm on a definite lifetime of feelings and feeling them and expressing them. I was thinking about your experience, and I was wondering, in terms of your relationship with God and having faith, was that challenged when you were diagnosed with cancer? Did you struggle with that at the time? Because I know sometimes when some, you know, things happen and you think, yeah, why? Come on.
So that's a really good question. I grew up definitely in a, you know, faith-based family. My mom was diagnosed in 2001 and I was 25 years old, and it definitely rocked my world. And actually the month after 9/11. So I felt like my world outside me was destroyed and changed and forever gone. And then the stability of my internal family was gone and changed and broken. And like the naivety, you know, was just kind of gone. But we all turned into our faith and we got through it. And I think, you know, as a family, we really bonded on more of an adult level, if that makes sense. My brother was living with me at the time. He was 23. So we just kind of bonded as adult human beings and getting through this together, like with my mom. But then I will say my mom had a recurrence. So that was 2001. My mom had a recurrence 3 years later in 2004. And that's when I got really angry. So that's probably where my faith, you know, if you were to map it on a graph, was the lowest of low. And I was just really bitter and angry. And I just didn't understand. We'd gotten through it and it felt good. And, but why are we doing this again? And then it just never felt like this may never end, or she might really die from this. And I think it was really hard to kind of process all those feelings. Now, thankfully, it's 18 years later. She's, knock on wood, doing amazing. So I think I had dealt with that doubt when my mom was going through it. When I noticed a change in my breast, my mom had always had a lump. I had the center of the nipple pull in and just do this kind of weird thing. And I was like, oh, this is weird. I'd had a mammogram when I was 30 just because of my mom's history. And I had one when I was 33. So those are kind of baselines. And then I was 37 at this time. So I hadn't had one in a couple of years. And finally, I was like, this isn't changing. I better go in and get it checked. And before I actually got my diagnosis, I was in a car and I saw the most beautiful rainbow, like one of those end to end, and where there is no beginning and there is no end. And it's just this stunning, and it's hard to explain, but I just felt this sense of peace. And it felt, and at this time, I just knew things were messed up. I didn't know where life was taking me. And I just said, I just felt this overwhelming sense that no matter what happens, it's okay. And it almost changed my frame of reference too, that I don't know what okay is. Okay might still mean that I might die and that's okay. Like it was just this weird sense of peace that everything is okay. And so even when I got my diagnosis, I don't know, I just didn't do the blaming thing. I just felt like everything was going to be okay. And then I remember when they did my mastectomy and my surgeon said, we took everything we could, like, but I'm not sure I got clean margins. And this like sinking feeling in the pit of your stomach, and you left it all there on the table. I gave you both my breasts. How could you not get everything? And you know, that fear of that recurrence or that it's going to go to your chest wall and so on and so forth. And I was at this moment, it was a tipping point. I felt I could just throw in the towel and give into fear, or I could turn into my faith. And so I truly said, God, I give it to you. I don't know what this means and what plans you have for me, but I'm just giving it to you because it's so big. I can't even deal with this right now. So it's hard to explain, but from that point forward, I've just made this decision to always follow him. And it's funny because now in COVID, life has slowed down and I've heard more of the voice and I've seen more of the experience of like his richness when I follow God and listen. And in the quiet of the night, like I just hear, or in the still of the morning, or when I'm in nature, like that's when I feel like most connected. I'm a busy go-getter kind of person, but there are many times where I hear and feel God and he's slow down, you know? And I honestly think, I don't think that he necessarily, I don't believe that God gives cancer, but I believe that he's there throughout and holding your hand and helping you. And I feel that he wanted me to see lessons from it and experience his graciousness and all of that. So I definitely learned a lot of gifts, and I think I needed to slow down and I think I needed to reprioritize. And so I'm trying to embrace all the gifts that come from it, even though it's, you know, very painful and still traumatizing, you know, in so many ways. And just this whole life after cancer, it's really difficult because it kind of doesn't end. I get a Zoladex shot, I take the medication, they all have side effects. So it's dealing with this like barrage of things. So even though it's done, it's not really done. There's like an asterisk after it. But yes, my faith has been really instrumental just in helping me to just be that like foundation so that during tough times, I can retreat back into this safe foundation place. And I've been finding just ways to like feel God's presence, whether it's through nature, whether it's through the Bible. I have a Bible app on my thing, whether it's the gratitude journal, and that's like my daily connection to kind of check in. All of those are like, have been very helpful tools for me just from a spiritual level.
Oh, I love all of that. I keep getting emotional when you're talking because there's so much. There's so much in there that I keep thinking, yes, me too. Because I often describe my cancer diagnosis, because I was 37 and it really was a huge, I think my body had been telling me for years, slow down, this isn't good.
Yeah.
What are you doing? And really, life post-cancer for me has been vastly different because I cannot push myself anymore. I just can't. I just can't push myself beyond what my body will do. And I have found the post-cancer world or my life very challenging rebuilding. Even rebuilding my physical health has taken a long time. I used to be someone that went to the gym 5 days a week doing boxing and running and all the things, and it had to be intense and it had to be this, and I have not been able to do that. And there's part of me that just doesn't want to. I don't want to thrash myself, but I love being outdoors with my dogs or out in the forests. Very in Auckland where I am, we're surrounded by a mountain range where there's beautiful walks that we can do, and that's where I like to be, because yeah, it fills my heart. It fills my spirit, because that I'm someone who needs to be constantly reminded that it's going to be okay and that there's this thing out there. And I had that moment for me was, it must have been nearing the end of 2019, and I did a cancer retreat, which is so weird for me because I'm quite introverted and I don't love being around people I don't know. And also I was just full of grief and anger at that point. I just didn't know what to do with myself. And I just really finished treatment, my Herceptin. So it was like 18 months of cancer treatment.
Yeah.
And they were from Canada. So it was a radiation oncologist, his wife, who was a psychologist, and a hospital chaplain who has a cancer that will just always keep coming back. So he's had to face mortality so many times. And that weekend really was the first time in a long time where I have a funny relationship with spirituality or God or those sorts of things, but it's the closest I can describe as feeling connected again to the spirit, to something, I don't know, a loving presence or however you want to describe it. And I think it was because I'd actually really had to stop and I'd let my guard down and I'd let myself feel and be held by people in terms of talking about that experience. And I understand that moment of when you're listening into that, you're really tapping in and that little voice going, it's okay, I'm here. I'm walking with you. It's okay. And I think it's really challenging when you've been through something as consuming as cancer, finding those moments or finding your way back to being able to connect in with either your intuition or whatever you want to call it, that can be very challenging as well.
It's definitely a journey, but I kind of learned this from the yoga tape that I did or DVD that I did day after day during when I was going through chemo. And it was like a really bad winter and I couldn't go outside and exercise or, you know, be outdoors at all. And I did this yoga tape and they kept talking about surrender. And I'm just a person that's like real type A, I'm real go-getter, I'm real all this. And I was like, and up to this point, I thought yoga was stupid. I like didn't understand. I was like, give me all the endorphins. Let me run. Let me go do everything like that's just go, go, go. And I really learned the power of surrender. And I think that that's such an important thing. And the connotation of it totally changed for me. I used to see, you know, surrender is like losing. It's bad. It's all this stuff. But no, it's beautiful. It's like being in that, letting it flow through. How are you dealing with this? It's really like a beautiful thing. And so it's this, you know, push-pull. And you need, I think I needed more surrender in my life. It, again, doesn't mean I'm giving up on anything, but I'm letting it flow through. And so I think that was like a really beautiful lesson that, you know, I learned from a gentle yoga DVD tape with Charles. But it was just a really, you know, an awesome thing. And again, like a gift, because someone from work was like, hey, I'm not using this. This would be great for you. And I was like, oh, thank you. You know, and I thought, oh yeah, maybe I'll do it. Well, no, I did it like every single day 6 days a week for, I don't know, probably 6 months. And it was the most amazing thing, was really settling into a mindfulness practice, something that kind of allowed me to connect with my breath, which is like the most basic building block of life. And it was a really, really beautiful thing. And so, you know, people are wondering, like, how can I maybe start? How can I try to find this connection? Whether it's yoga, whether it's nature, whether it's writing, those are all some really amazing tips. Give yourself the space, no distractions, and do them. So put the phone away, turn the TV off, and just be in the zone for those. And I encourage you, like, you will see results for sure.
It just occurred to me as you were talking, I was thinking, because my brain never works in a linear fashion, but I think what it taught me, and I repeatedly will need to learn this lesson because I'm a slow learner, is that I think when you go through something like cancer and when your body is so impacted by it, that journey going back to being in your body and being okay can never only be about the physical. But it's very easy to focus only on the physical, where you think, oh, I want to get my stamina back. Oh, I want to do this, that, the other. But actually healing, in my mind, actually needs to be all the components. You know, to really face the grief and the loss of what's happened to your body and to your life, you have to be open and willing to step into your feelings. And to be able to step into any discomfort. And I think that's probably for me why it's been harder post-cancer, because it's that trying to navigate all of that stuff when there's that pressure of, you're okay now, aren't you? Not okay.
I think that's a really important point. It's funny because you asked me, obviously, about God and did I lose my faith during that? What I did kind of lose trust in is my body. And I think that was like a really hard lesson. I don't know that I was really prepared for. And again, I had my mom. My mom was an example for me for two times. Like, I had seen a person really close to me go through breast cancer. But I was a runner. I had run a marathon prior to this. I'd run half marathons. I ran in my neighborhood all the time. And I just couldn't understand why my body could let this happen, I guess. I felt betrayed by my body. And I really had to work on the process of regaining the trust in my body. And it was actually through running that love came back. Because the first mile that I ran after breast cancer, I've run thousands of miles, thousands and thousands of miles in my life. But that first mile after cancer was the most beautiful thing I've ever done. I think it started me on this path of loving my body again and trusting my body again and realizing it is capable of so much and all that it had been through. And it's just this kind of grace of allowing, yes, it maybe failed me, but we are a team and we're going to go through this together. And I can't really trade it in and get another one anyway, but it's just, it really started me on a path to trusting my body again. I now run like a half marathon every year, and I try to raise money for breast cancer research and run for those that who can't, because there's some people, to your point, like maybe they ran before and they just like physically can't, or there's people who are in active treatment right now, or there's people who are metastatic and are having so many side effects, but love running and would give anything to run a mile, but just can't. So I don't take it lightly. I really am kind of amazed at what the body can do. And it's really a journey. And that's all I will tell people. You can get that trust back, but you have to work with your body, if that makes sense, and connect that mind, body, spirit. And yes, you have to believe that you and your body are connected again, and you have to breathe and respect it. And then the spirit of letting that all flow through. It is really all connected and kind of part of that healing process that you speak of. But it was huge for me, was getting on that path to loving my body again and trusting it again.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm still on that path. I think it's a lifelong journey. There's so many layers of it, I think, when it's your body. And I think for many people, there are other pressures, which is a whole other conversation. But I've been loving having these conversations, because I think it's so important to remember that this experience is actually very
individual. I can relate to you and I can relate to what you're saying, but we come into cancer with so many other things that have been going on. And so that time afterwards, you can't rush that. And I wanted to rush it. I wanted to be better. I wanted to be able to work again. Thank you very much. Because all my self-esteem was wrapped up in achieving and all of these things. And now, yeah, I'm just having to reassess how I look at life and how I experience it. And it's definitely not a comfortable experience. I think it's, yeah, in the end, if you're open to it and you say, all right, I'm going to lean into this, then that is really where the healing starts.
Yes, 100%.
It has been so magic being able to talk to you, and I'm really looking forward to when your book comes out, your poetry.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yes, I'm so excited. I have it right here, sample, but yes, I'm just really excited. And I took the front cover photo. It's from a lighthouse in Florida, and yeah. It's, you know, it's this circular reference of cancer bleeding into COVID, COVID bleeding into cancer, and then just feeling like you can never escape and see the end of it, you know, and kind of thinking like you're done and then you're not done. It just keeps going. And it's really such a project for me. And then I have two goddaughters. They are like light of my world. I love them. One is 15 and one is 5. And the 15-year-old actually had sent me like a picture of this like COVID queen, and it was really cool. And so I almost like interviewed her, and what were you feeling when you drew this picture, and how are you, and all that. So I end up putting, you know, her picture into the poetry book, and then I wrote a poem to accompany her Corona Queen drawing. And then I asked my other goddaughter, like I had to include both. So I asked my other goddaughter, I had a poem called Get on the Horse. And I was like, can you draw me a horse and a girl? She drew me a unicorn and two girls. But I was like, you get a D for listening, but it's so cute. So I have her photo in there too, and or her drawing. And so I told her the other day, because there's a local store that's going to have it like for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And I said, Bevin, if you come in October, you can come see your picture in your book. And she's so excited. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, I just love her to death. And I was like, I got to bottle her up and sell her everywhere. Yeah. So I'm just like, it's just such a project too, that like I can have them included. And it's just a legacy that like they can later, when she's at a cocktail party, she can tell people she's a horrible artist, but she has a picture in a book somewhere.
Oh, that's so precious. And so with your podcast, is that on a hiatus for the moment, or if you put a full stop behind that part?
I might pivot and do something different with it. So I'm definitely done. And I've had over 100 episodes, and it was an awesome ride. And to your point, like hearing people's journeys, like what a blessing, wow. Like, wow, that they are entrusting me to tell this story.
Yeah.
I think I never understood going into it, because I started actually just with my story for the first season. So first season was my story. But when I started sharing guest stories and seeing them come to the show and then leave a little bit lighter and a little bit freer, and being part of that, for some people it's really the first time they're sharing it publicly.
Yeah.
To have a little hand in that is just really a magical gift. And so it's a lot. And to you, I'm very empathic too. And so I feel the feelings of people. And I got to a point where it was a really good ride. I feel like there's 100 episodes of people, you know, from start to finish, or want to just jump in anywhere. There's enough content out there for people. But what I may do something different, maybe the start of the year. I'm really enjoying like having a break and doing some stuff. And I think it's kind of these healthy boundaries. That was one thing that cancer taught me too, was like, it's okay to say no sometimes.
Yeah.
And actually you need to say no a lot of times. And between running and training for a half marathon, which I run for research and tried to raise like $1,500 to try to fund research. And then this book launch, which is outside my normal scope. I was like, it's okay. It's okay to say, and I work a full-time job. So like I have a job.
Yeah.
And we like recently reorganized, and it's like just a lot and different responsibilities and different tasks that I'm like taking on. It's okay. Like it's okay to say no. And it's okay to say not now. it's okay to say, I'll maybe pick it back up later and it might be different too. And, you know, that's kind of my Aquarian spirit is, hey, like, I'm okay to stop it and I'm okay to maybe change gears and do something different. So
yeah,
I really think like I have DJ Breast Cancer. I'm really proud of it. And it's built a platform. It's connected me to so many amazing, primarily women, survivors, providers, caregivers, all kinds of people, just people around the world that I would have never had the, you know, chance to meet because of it. So I'll probably still keep something going on that platform. It just might be in a different format or different kind of fun. So we'll see.
Absolutely. Things come in seasons, I think. And yes, yeah, you know when it's time to step back and reassess, and you never know how it may come back. So if people are interested in, if they haven't heard your podcast or they want to follow you on social media, where's the best place to find you?
Yeah, so DJ Breast Cancer is my Instagram handle. It's DJ Breast Cancer is also the name of my podcast, and you can find that on my website. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you find podcasts. And then my website is www.djbreastcancer.org. And there's details to my podcast, to my poetry book coming out, and all sorts of blog posts that I've done also too over the years. So I think it's, you know, a good way to just see a breast cancer journey from kind of more of a life after cancer perspective, especially with the blogs, because, you know, I started it up definitely in the after cancer-ish phase. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, again, thank you so much for joining me. It's been such a pleasure to be able to talk to you and hear your experience. And I know people are going to get so much out of hearing your experience post-cancer.
Thank you, Helen. It's been awesome.
Thanks so much for listening. The C Word is every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on Auckland's 104.6 Planet FM. And anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/thecword.